All right. Well, thank you for coming this evening. I don't admit this often to my wife, but I think I need to get a bigger computer so I can see the screen better. I bought this one. I thought, this is great. It's so compact. And now I've noticed when I'm giving lectures, I'm sort of squinting a little bit. And, but I know I don't need to go get my eyes checked. I know that for sure. Dire Dragons, a missing link in dinosaur history. You know, the evolutionists talk a lot about missing links. Well, this is a different missing link, sort of a missing link in dinosaur history, a missing link in the history of dinosaurs. Now, if you fall asleep, that's okay, because you can buy the book and you won't have missed anything at all. A little bit of a sales pitch there. You caught it, right? Exodus 20:11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day, wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And last night we talked a little bit about the 6 days of creation, the flood, geology, and the age of the earth. And you, if you missed last night, you did miss a lot, but we can't reiterate that here this evening. Well, when did God make the dinosaurs? Bible says God created everything in 6 days, and we spent a lot of time on the road this summer. We were in Saskatchewan, and it was hot and dusty. Imagine that. And then we went down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and it was hot and humid. And then we went to Manitoba, and it was cool and wet. But as we did all of that traveling, especially at camps, we had grades 3 to 8 in Saskatchewan, then we had junior and senior high in Manitoba, and we taught on the 6 days of creation, what was made on each of the days of creation, and I bet you by the time we're done the camps, the grades 3 to 8, junior high and senior high, they knew what was made on each of the days of creation, and then in some cases the parents came and the children knew what was made, and the parents didn't know what was made on each of the days. But on day number 6, God created all of the land animals, which would have included the dinosaurs and people, Adam and Eve. Therefore, based on the authority of the Bible, if we just left our preconceived ideas behind, dinosaurs and people must have been made at the same time. Therefore, dinosaurs and people living at the same time. You might say, well, wait a minute, where's the evidence? Well, we're going to take a look at some here this evening. Living fossils. Now, the term living fossil was actually coined by, anybody know? Charles Darwin. When he voyaged around the world on his famous Beagle voyage, the interesting thing is I went to the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology, and they had a PhD give a lecture, and he kept repeating this over and over again, almost to the point where I wanted to jump up and say, wait a minute, do you understand what you're saying? And it was a repeated phrase that Darwin recognized that the fossils bore a startling resemblance to their living counterparts. Wait a minute. The fossils bore a startling resemblance to their living counterparts. What was he really saying? Well, Genesis chapter 1, there's a phrase that's repeated 10 times, and it's God's trademark, if you will, God's fingerprints, if you will, the evidence of creation, if you will, on God's creation, and it's a phrase. Anybody know what it is? Reproduce after their own kind. What was Darwin recognizing? That things had reproduced after their own kind, also known as living fossils. All right? In 1938, off the coast of South Africa, an interesting fish was brought to shore. And it was not this particular one, which was caught in 1989, and this is a cast of it that we have in our large traveling creation museum. But it was one like this, and it took him a couple months to say, well, wait a minute, what is that fish? Well, it turned out to be a coelacanth, thought by evolutionists, they now claim, they had thought had gone extinct about 70 million years ago. I don't believe in the millions of years anymore, once did. And we talked last night why that is an important thing not to believe. You see, the millions of years was originally proposed as a substitute for what? Noah's flood. You see, if we could get rid of Noah's flood, we could get rid of Moses' geology. If we could get rid of Moses' geology, if we could get rid of Noah's flood, we could get rid of the history in the Bible. We could get rid of the Bible. We could get rid of Christianity. Fundamentally, we could get rid of God. Anyway, the point is that in 1938, when they found the coelacanth still alive and well, some people said it would be just like finding a living what? Living fossil, but also a living dinosaur. Interesting. Just like finding a living dinosaur. Well, not really that much of a surprise, because when I dig dinosaurs in places like Glendive, Montana, in the Hell Creek Formation, we find things buried with the dinosaurs that are still alive and well with us today. If you go through the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology, one of the newer exhibits that they built in the last few years, you'll see, you know, when you walk in and you see the Albertosaurus mama and the Albertosaurus baby, if you've gone through there, and there's a little patch of water. If you look in there, there's a little turtle. It's actually a soft-shell turtle, and it's just a model. But when you go outside the, basically go through the Tyrrell, and then there's an aquarium at the end, you'll see this turtle swimming in there. You ever notice that, if you've gone through it? Well, that's a soft-shell turtle, too, and that one's still alive. Wait a minute. Soft-shell turtles suddenly appear in the fossil record. They're found with the dinosaurs, and they're still here today. Is that good evidence for evolution or creation? Actually, powerful, positive evidence for creation. Wait a minute. What would the evidence be if creation was actually true? See, you only get the answers to the questions you ask, and if you don't ask the right questions, you won't get the right answers. See, the evidence for creation would be that things have suddenly appeared in the fossil record, and they've reproduced after their own kind. Here are fossils we find with the dinosaurs, here in Alberta, but also in Glendive, Montana, soft-shell turtle. Still here today. When I was in Seoul, Korea, giving lectures at YIS, Yongsan International School of Seoul, we went to the market, and I have seen them eating all kinds, the people in Seoul, Korea, all kinds of weird things. I ate some street food, and after I ate it, I thought, that wasn't too bad. I wondered what it was. All right? And so I was talking to the high schoolers and the junior highs in Seoul, Korea, and I said, do you guys eat these soft-shell turtles? And that was a big foot in my mouth. They said, no. I said, I saw them in the market. You buy them as pets. Okay. Whoops. Soft-shell turtles are still here. We find them with the dinosaurs. They suddenly appear in the fossil record. What else do we find with the dinosaurs? Willows. Willows are still here. Figs. Figs are still here. Crocodiles. Crocodiles are still here. Alligators. Alligators are still here. Redwoods. Redwoods are still here. Garfish. Garfish are still here. You know, when I went through school, I was taught that the so-called dinosaur age was so radically different than what we have today. Yet when I dig up dinosaurs in the Hell Creek Formation in Montana, what do I find? I find dinosaurs and I find all of these other things that fundamentally are still here today. They've reproduced after their own kind. That's not evidence for evolution at all. In fact, if you go through the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology, there's this big terrarium they call the Cretaceous Garden. Now, every single plant in there has been found with the dinosaurs as fossils. But all those plants in there are still growing alive and well today. Question, is Cretaceous Garden really the best name for that? I think we need to have a petition, and we should call it the Creation Garden, and then there should be a quote, things have faithfully reproduced after their own kind. It's powerful, positive evidence that your Bible is actually true. But most evolutionists never want to ask the question, if creation were true, what would the evidence actually be? Living fossils. It should be no more a surprise to find a living dinosaur than a living redwood, or a living crocodile, or a living willow, or a living fig. No more surprise to find a living dinosaur. People all over the world have claimed to see recently living dinosaurs, recently living creatures that supposedly have gone extinct. In fact, Bill Gibbons from Calgary has written a book. I think he calls it Missionaries and Their Monsters. And these are missionaries from all over the world that have claimed to see creatures that supposedly had gone extinct. Now, here's a creature that local tribesmen in Africa call Mekele Mbembe. And there's another tribe that has a different name for it. Another tribe, they have a different name. Another tribe, they have a different name. But this is how they describe it. Interesting. Now, in the 1700s, a ship full of people saw a creature that was described like this, and this was published in a publication. Well, Dr. Shuker believes, and he's not a creationist, by the way, he believes that this is actually a basilosaurus that, according to evolution, went extinct tens of millions of years ago. I don't believe in the millions of years anymore, but that's what the evolutionists believe. By the way, the only main difference between this depiction and this depiction are these whale-like flukes at the end. By the way, in the fossil record, you don't see this. This has been added by the evolutionists out of here, not found in the fossils themselves. And here's some old newspaper reports, as a brontosaurus roaming Africa's wilds, etc. So that's not proof, but it's interesting. All of these things bear on the subject of when dinosaurs actually existed. Dinosaurs were known for centuries as dragons. People have been finding dinosaur bones all over the world for 2,000 years. People like the Chinese who've always called them dragons. Here's a page out of the Book of Dinosaurs, a Natural History Museum Guide by Tim Gardam. And this is a Natural History Museum in London, England. Notice the Chinese writing at the right. The first recorded fossil find written over 1,700 years ago, this account of a dragon bone find is the earliest written description of a dinosaur fossil. And so there's no question, no doubt about it, even the evolutionists understand that dinosaur fossils used to be called dragon bones. Now, they don't believe that dinosaurs and people live together, but they admit that one of the ancient words for dinosaurs was dragons. Are dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible? Well, the quick answer is no, but we have to understand that dinosaur is a fairly recent word, invented by Sir Richard Owen in 1841, first went to print in 1842. Why don't we find the word dinosaur in the Bible? Well, here we are in 2015. King James Bible translated into English, just one particular example. I understand there were English translations before that, 1611. The word dinosaur wasn't invented until, or coined until 1841. That's 230 years before the word dinosaur was even invented. So we wouldn't necessarily expect to find that particular word. But we do find another word that means basically the same thing, dragon. And let's get back to that word. Early paleontologists often referred to dinosaur fossils as dragons before the word dinosaur was coined. And as we'll see, even after the word dinosaur was coined. So here's an interesting book that was published in 1840. That was before the word dinosaur was coined. It's called The Book of the Great Sea Dragons, Ichthyosauri and Plesiosauri. What kind of writing is this? What language? Hebrew. Gedolim, Tanaim of Moses, and this is written by Thomas Hawkins, Esquire. And he was finding all of these fossils of plesiosaurs and ichthyosaurs. These are marine reptiles. I wonder why he's got that Hebrew up there. Up here, he's categorized 30 images of the fossils he's found. And he's calling them dragon, 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 dragon. And he's got the locations where they're found in. This one from Walton Street. That's not in the street, but the village of Street, okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Here's a dragon from the Leos Shale of Street. That's the village of Street, 1835. What is it? It's an ichthyosaur. Here's a dragon from the village of Street, 1834. What is it? It's a plesiosaur. Now, there it is, Gedolim Tanaim of Moses. What's this all about? Well, that's from Genesis chapter 1. And in the King James it says whales, but in Hebrew it's actually literally the sea dragons. That's why his book is called The Book of the Great Sea Dragons, And that phrase, Gedolim Taninim, is coming from Genesis chapter 1, right out of the Hebrew. And so why did the early paleontologists refer to these as dragons? Because they're getting it straight out of the Bible. So when the early paleontologists dug up the marine reptiles, the flying reptiles, and what we would call the dinosaurs, they knew what they were. They were the dragons mentioned in Scripture. The same creatures that were mentioned throughout the Middle Ages, the same creatures the Chinese were digging up, these were the dragons. Dragon was the common word. It'd be like this. We found a fossil deposit with dogs. Okay? Fossil dogs. And so we're going to go and we're going to dig up these fossil dogs, but there comes a point when you want to write a scientific paper on these fossil dogs. So now you have to categorize these things scientifically into what's known as a binomial nomenclature. Okay, genus and species, etc. So now you have to get scientific. So what happened is Sir Richard Owen, who invented the word dinosaur, our creation friend, he had to come up with a word, dinosauria. And then they started classifying these things scientifically. But the common word, just like we have a common word dog, but we want to classify them, Canis lupus, Canis familiaris, that's the scientific terms, but they're just dogs, right? These are just dragons. Okay, these are the scientific words. See here, plesiosauri, etc. There's the genus. Okay, that's what's going on. Okay, so here we have the actual fossils in the Natural History Museum in London. Hawk for Hawkins, Thomas Hawkins Esquire. Sea drag for sea dragon. Now here's the interesting thing. The creationists, most of the early founding fathers of geology and paleontology were creationists, Bible believers, and they made a direct connection to what they were digging up. The dragons mentioned in Scripture. But when the evolutionists got a hold of the scientific establishment, they wanted to get rid of the biblical connection, the dragons mentioned in Scripture. Now, what happens in the late 19th and early 20th century? The evolutionists say, we want to get rid of that biblical connection. And what happens in the late 19th, early 20th century? Dragons become mythology. And here we are in the 21st century, and people say, what? You believe in dragons? Dragons are mythology. In fact, now the newer translations have gotten rid of dragon out of the Bible. Why? Because dragons are mythology. Isn't it interesting how quick history changes? Interesting. Hawkins, sea dragon. In the Natural History Museum today, if you fly over to London, England, take a look at it, the history is still there, stamped on the actual fossils. No missing. Because the early founding fathers of geology and paleontology were Bible-believing Christians, they knew what they were digging up, they knew the connection here. Dinosaur fossils were called dragons even after the word dinosaur was coined. Why? Because dinosaur was a scientific word, dragon was a common word. Early paleontologists and dinosaur bones. Here we have our buddy Sir Richard Owen, creationist. Emily Tennyson's journal. You're probably familiar with her husband, Alfred Tennyson, famous poet. Here's what she said in her journal of July 23rd, 1865. Professor Owen arrived. Alfred and Professor Owen enjoyed their trip to Brighstone and returned in high spirits. They spread out their luncheon on Mr. Fox's lawn. We'll hear a little bit about him in just a second. They looked at the great dragon, which is quite new to the world and quite answers expectations. He never saw one so sheathed in armor and thought of calling you can't it, Eucanthus Vectianus, most interesting he was. This was 24 years after the word dinosaur was coined. Still calling it a dragon? Why? That's a common word. This dinosaur was actually a type of ankylosaur, and it was eventually named Polacanthus. Who was Mr. Fox? He was the Reverend William Fox. Dinosaurs were his passion, so much so that he gained the respect and friendship of scientists such as Sir Richard Owen, the guy that invented the word dinosaur, and John Hulk, president of the Geological Society of London. In 1882, Fox was described as putting, quote, always the bones first and the parish next, end quote, and wished for a permanent position in Brighstone. That's the kind of pastor I'd be, by the way. saying, quote, "I cannot leave this place while I have any money left to live on. I take such deep joy in hunting for old dragons." Now, these ones were so old that they were dead, buried in the rocks, okay? Now, he's actually writing this letter to Sir Richard Owen, who invented the word dinosaur, and he calls them old dragons. This was over two decades after the word dinosaur was coined. There is no doubt whatsoever that Sir Richard Owen knew exactly what he was talking about. Dragons were the common word for dinosaurs. Now, this is vitally important because there are creation ministries out there that are saying, oh, well, people forgot about dragons. And then they found the bones, they didn't know what they were, and they called them dinosaurs. That's not true. They never forgot about the dragons. When they found them, they knew exactly what they were, and they made a direct connection to Scripture. Dragon was a common word, dinosaur was a scientific word. Is there any evidence that dinosaurs and humans lived together recently? I'm glad you asked. That's what we're going to look at here this evening. Soft elastic dinosaur tissue. Many of you know about this, but we'll just take a quick look here. This is the femur of a Tyrannosaurus rex that was discovered a number of years ago, approximately 2005, and Dr. Mary Schweitzer extracted soft elastic tissue out of this portion here. As we talked about yesterday, bones are not just minerals. They contain large amounts of soft tissue. If you take a chicken bone and soak it in acetic acid vinegar, the next day you can tie it in a knot. Right? Maybe some of you have done this experiment. Well, that's basically what Mary Schweitzer did to this portion of T-Rex bone. Claimed to be 68 million years old. Don't believe that anymore, and Mary Schweitzer shouldn't either. But nevertheless, she still believes it's 68 million years old, and here's the soft elastic tissue stretched and bounced back. Here's some more of the soft elastic tissue, not only soft elastic tissue, but red blood cells. Everything we know about the degradation of biological molecules, got a theology degree, got a biology degree, everything we know, not what we don't know, says this soft elastic tissue cannot possibly be 68 million years old, cannot possibly be 1 million years old. Soft elastic tissue. This T-Rex did not die millions of years ago. So what did Mary Schweitzer do? All of her evolutionary colleagues were giving her a hard time, so she did an experiment to demonstrate how soft elastic tissue could last, what, 68 million years? No, 2 years. And they all give her high fives. They think she's demonstrated how it could last 68 million years, but in reality she only demonstrated how it could last 2 years. Seriously, I'm being serious here. Basically, she took modern tissue and blood vessels, and she put some of it in water and some of it in blood, because blood has hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is high in iron, and the vessels in water rotted after about 2 months, and the vessels in blood, which is high in hemoglobin, which is high in iron, lasted for 2 years. Granted, she was able to preserve it for 2 years. So, she has 67 million, etc., etc., etc. to go. Good start, I guess, if you believe in evolution. C14 in the fossil record, we talked about this last night, so I'm not going to go into that any further. But we'll just quickly show. If you believe in the millions of years, after 100,000 years, all the carbon-14 in any living tissue, such as bone, should be gone. But if you believe that those bones got there 4,400 years ago during Noah's flood, should still be carbon-14 there. So let's test it. So here's a sample that was taken in 2005 when I was in Glendive, Montana, out of this duckbill dinosaur femur. We tested it. Guess what? Lots of carbon-14 there. Can't possibly be millions of years old. This dinosaur only died thousands of years ago. What a wonderful time to believe in your Bible. Dinosaurs did not die millions of years ago. Carl Sagan wrote this book about the human psyche, if you will, Speculations on the Evolution of Human Intelligence. It's interesting. He takes a little sidetrack in the book. And he seems to be so impressed with the evidence from dragon legends and dragon depictions that dragons and dragon legends really are talking about dinosaurs. He has to explain it. So here's the gist of what he does. Millions and millions of years ago, okay, I don't really believe this, this is what he's saying. Millions and millions of years ago, when these little mammal-like creatures were scurrying beneath the feet of these giant reptiles we call dinosaurs, they were so terrified by these gigantic beasts that these thoughts, these images, were passed up the evolutionary chain until these little shrew-like rodents eventually became people, and then they expressed them as dragon legends and dragon stories and dragon depictions. I don't think so. Nice try, though. Adrian Mayer says, well, the ancients were digging up fossils, and so some evolutionists have jumped on the bandwagon and said, ah, that's how we have depictions of dinosaurs and other extinct creatures. Well, if you actually read Adrian Mayer's book, she demonstrates, according to her own research, if you accept her assumptions, which I don't, but even if you did, that the reconstructions they made were totally inaccurate. So that doesn't work. She wrote a couple of books, and some evolutionists see her as the savior to some of the artwork we're going to be discussing today, but she's done anything but save them from the actual evidence. Could the artwork be the result of ancients digging fossils? Well, I've got 16 reasons in the book why they couldn't have created accurate artwork by digging dinosaurs or other fossils. Let me give you just one example. Sometimes you'll find a depiction of a dinosaur or another ancient creature, but those fossils are only found on the other side of the planet. What do you do with that? Bit of a problem. Let's start with the U.S. This one's fairly well known. Now, if you're an evolutionist, depiction of a fish, oh, yeah, they saw fish, no problem. Yeah, they saw birds, they saw other humans, they saw goats, they saw, no problem. But as soon as you see this, wow, what are we going to do with that? Well, maybe it's a snake. Well, the tail is just a U shape. It's not connected to the body. These really aren't legs. These are just a mud stain. And this is basically what Phil Center did. And he went to the location, and this is a real petroglyph we'll see in a second, and he didn't get up on the ledge to observe it close up. And let's take a look. This is at Natural Bridges National Monument near Landing, Utah. Fran Barnes, a recognized authority on rock art of the American Southwest, writes this: there is a petroglyph in Natural Bridges National Monument that bears a startling resemblance to a dinosaur, specifically a brontosaurus, with long tail, neck, small head, and all. And brontosaurus was a mistake. And now they're saying, ah, no, brontosaurus wasn't a mistake. Okay, so, all right. Was a mistake for many years, and now they're saying it wasn't a mistake. Anyway, this was on the way down a few years ago. And here's where this petroglyph is, done by the Anasazis, who inhabited this area, roughly 150 BC to 1200 AD, if you want to sort of pinpoint a little bit more about 700 AD. So there it is up there. There's a tail, there's a body, there's a neck, there's a head, and cameras are terrible. If you go with your eye, you can see it very clearly. And we stood down there for a while, and we had people from all kinds of different backgrounds, different education. And they just look up there, oh, hey, look at the dinosaur. Lady comes with her son, oh, hey, look up there, look at the dinosaur. And they're not really thinking about what they're saying. Right? If somebody carved a dinosaur up there, how did they carve it accurately? How were they, you know, we're not talking about last week. We're talking about 700 AD. They had to see the dinosaur in order to carve it. And it's very easy to see with the eye, which is another evidence that we have been designed. It's very difficult to capture with a camera. Now, here's my good camera. There's the tail. There's the legs. There's the head. And this, I believe, is actually a tongue. This is mud stain. This is mud stain. It's not really a mud stain, but anyway. And Phil Center went up there in 2010. He declared to the world that this is not a dinosaur, et cetera, et cetera. And he never got up. He took his binoculars from a distance. And I said, Phil, have you been up? He's an atheist. He says he's a Christian now. He goes to the Greek Orthodox Church, but I have to question him on that one. But anyway, I said, Phil, did you get up on the ledge? No. I said, why not? Well, I couldn't get a ladder down there. I said, well, I brought a ladder down there on my own back. Really? I said, yeah. I said, yeah, my back hurt for 3 days. I said, well, I got a ladder down there. He said, well, kudos to you. And I was over, you know, I was a lot heavier than I am now. And I said, Phil, you need to get up on the ledge because you're saying that this is not connected. I said, it's connected, Phil. And I said, you're saying that's a mud stain. I said, that's not a mud stain. Anyway, I have these discussions with atheists. It's an older picture my buddy took. There's a Sinclair gas station. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever what the Anasazis were depicting. I believe that they saw dinosaurs not very long ago. Now, this one's very well known, and I think it's very good evidence. Well, let's go on to Mexico here. And this is actually what I now call the Guatemalan outback, because we spent 5 hours on what they call roads, and then we had to change our tire because it ripped the tire apart. And really beautiful sunrise. And it took us 5 hours to get to the Usumacinta River. And then we cruised down the Usumacinta River, and we hung right down the Lacantun River. And that's about the best directions I'll be able to give you. We ended up in this place called El Planchon de la Figueras, and nobody goes here. And this is basically covered with water 10 months of the year. And we tried to go the year before, volcanic eruptions, and that was all done. And there were some people living across the river here, and they came over in their boats wondering what in the world they're doing there. And there are actually petroglyphs here. And we had to sweep some of this stuff away, and so our guides took tree branches, and they started sweeping. When we got there, I thought, man, we're never going to find. We're looking for a particular petroglyph. And I just remember thinking, Lord, if you don't show us this, we're never going to find. And this is done by the Mayans between 250 A.D. and 900 A.D. And just threw a prayer up there, and about 5-10 minutes later we found it. And I was outlining it in chalk there so we could photograph it. And there it is there. And I remember showing it to our guide, and he was the only one that knew how to get here, a river runner. And this is the only other picture that had been taken about 27 years before, and they had traced it and outlined it with basically time-lapse and outlined it with a flashlight. And the gentleman that took National Geographic there 26, 27 years before was the same guy that we had, the only guy that knew how to get there. And he said, what do you think it is, our guide? I said, well, it's definitely not a crocodile. And he said, no, definitely not a crocodile. Well, the next morning, I showed him the image on my phone, the comparison that you see here, this and this. And he looked at me and said, the Mayans must have seen Dinosaurio. I looked at him and I said, see? And so we went out to another site and he's looking, and we get back into the car. He said, did you see any? I said, did I see any what? Dinosaurio. He's looking in the artwork now of the Mayans for dinosaurs. And I said, well, yeah, actually I did. He said, can I see? So I showed him the picture, the next site I'll show you. His name was Ahinio. He said, look, I am a direct descendant of the Mayans. And here he is there. And it's kind of hard to deny it. And yes, I believe you. I believe you. So, Ahinio. Here we are in the next site, and this is Bonampak, and this site was built roughly 650 to 850 A.D. This is in Chiapas, Mexico. And we're looking at this structure here in room number 2, and we were the first onto the scene there, and believe me, in about 15 minutes I was soaked. Weighed a little bit more there, but not the place for a Canadian. This is a picture I took from inside. And different headgear. Some of them have jaguars, some of them have fish, and the coloration seems to be correct. But one of these guys is wearing headgear, a very interesting creature that's red. Iguanas aren't red, crocodiles aren't red, it doesn't look like an iguana, it doesn't look like a crocodile. In the 1940s, and it has a layer of calcite, so it's very difficult to see, but in the 1940s they painted this with kerosene, and so the images could show through. Don't try that today. They'll lead you away with some very special jewelry. And but they did this in the 1940s, and they duplicated all the images, two painters, over several days. And notice the size. This is probably some type of costumes that they made, but nevertheless, the jaguar's approximately the right shape and the right size. But it looks a lot like a dinosaur, something like a raptor like this, Deinonychus antiropus. Interesting. That's not too far away from the other artwork that we looked at there in Mexico. Let's go on to South America. Machu Picchu, absolutely beautiful place, even though it has somewhat of a dark history, spiritually speaking. In Lima, Peru, the Rafael Herrero Larco Museum has over 30,000 pre-Columbian ceramic vessels on display, and I spent a number of days. I probably looked at anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 of these. And I'm pointing at one there, which is from the Huari culture in southern Peru. The Huari culture existed in southern Peru from roughly 500 to 900 AD. We'll take a closer look here. And here you can see one of these reed boats, and you can actually go, and they have some of these, and you can take them out if you want. And here he has a fishing rod. Here are some fish here. There's a bird. There's a diving bird. Another bird here. He's got a hat on. He's got an interesting creature on his hat. Well, let's take a closer look at that creature. Got a bird-like beak. He's got a long tail at the back, and he's got an interesting crest on the back here. Now, when you compare that bird-like beak, big tail at the back, interesting crest on the back, it looks a lot like a Protoceratops. Here we are in a more northern portion of Peru in Chan Chan, and I want us to take a look at the artwork here. What do we have here? Fish, not really necessarily the way that we would depict them. And this is known as artistic stylization. Every culture generally has a different way of depicting things, known as artistic stylization. Here we have some birds down here. It's very important not to forget about artistic stylization. Just because something's depicted different than what we would depict it doesn't mean it cannot be identified. For example, if you look at ads from the 1940s compared to the 1970s compared to the 1990s, there's artistic stylization differences. And so artistic stylization is very important when it comes to artwork. Okay, now I'll give you a little bit of a hint here. These people from the Xemu culture lived very close to the coastline. Anybody want to identify, first of all, what is this creature? It's a bird. And anybody want to try to identify what kind of bird it is? Pelican. That's exactly correct. Now here we have a piece of burial cloth, and we have some creatures on here. Now I have seen hundreds of depictions of birds from this particular culture, the Xemu culture, and you will often see the tails. You'll see the wings. And even in very simplistic depictions, you'll see the tails as triangles. Okay, so I can assure you that these are not birds, but they have bird-like heads, but they have long tails, reptile-like, and they have circular patterns. Let's take a closer look here. Now, those circular patterns are interesting because those are found on lizards. But they're also found on dinosaurs. A number of different dinosaurs have these circular patterns. In fact, the scale patterns on lizards and dinosaurs I have found are the same. Now, this is a dinosaur scale. This is a cast that's at the Terrell. And so the circular patterns are found on dinosaurs. And here's the interesting thing. We had a duck-like dinosaur, duck-billed dinosaur. And this guy here is known as Brachylophosaurus. Very, very interesting. Now, here's another little artifact. This is from the Shaanxi culture. Let me just back up. The Xemu culture existed from 1000 AD to about 1450 AD. That's the Xemu culture. This is the Shaanxi culture, which is sort of an overlap. This is in Peru as well. And the Shaanxi culture is from 900 AD to about 1470 AD, and this creature never did have ears. Now, these are just little figurines about like that, and made out of pottery, and they made little dogs, and they made camelids like alpacas. and various different things. And they weren't the greatest, but they were identifiable. This creature never had ears, but he's got four legs, and a category that would fit is definitely some type of reptile. Now, when you compare this creature here to a juvenile Mosasaurus, it's definitely in that category. And so now we've looked at several pieces of artwork in Peru that fit dinosaur-like creatures. There are many, many, many others. Well, let's move on to the Netherlands. And here we have a piece of artwork from the Book of Hours, Yusuf Serum, 1440. St. George slaying the dragon. St. George was a real man. He died in 303 AD. Most of the ideas that St. George slayed a dragon didn't come about till the 10th, 11th century or so. And so I don't believe St. George actually slayed a dragon. It became in vogue for the hero, the saint, to slay a dragon. And so you'll find that St. George slays all kinds of different looking dragons, and I believe the reason is he didn't actually slay a particular dragon. Okay? Died in 303 AD. But you can get an idea of the size of the dragon compared to the horse and compared to the man. Sometimes St. George is a little bit feminine, depending on where the depiction was made. Just a side note. Something I've noticed. All right. So we can get an idea of how big that dragon is. And you start looking at dinosaurs. And here is a dinosaur known as a Coelophysis, which would have been the same size as this particular dragon. Notice the hind legs, the tail. You might say, well, wait a minute, where's his front legs? Has anybody seen the IMAX documentary of T-Rex? IMAX documentary of T-Rex? I believe that the dragons is the common word for dinosaur in the Middle Ages, when these people were seeing these things, and I believe they did see them, they were seeing them alive. They weren't seeing fossils that don't move. They weren't seeing displays in museums that don't move. They were seeing them alive. And when you see a creature that's alive, it's a lot different when you see him run across the field. It's like being with my dad. He loves animals. And you're driving down the road. Oh, do you see those elk? And you're like, by the time you get to see them, oh man, they're already in the bush. Or you see that bear, and oh, there it goes, and you miss it. You know, you ever been with your mom or dad, and your dad points something out, and by the time you get to look at it, it's gone? It's sort of like that, right? Well, the interesting thing, even though it was an animation, that big screen and T-Rex moving around, T-Rex had his legs pulled in like this, and you can't miss those big hind legs moving around the screen. But even though we watched it for 20 minutes or almost half an hour, the one thing you missed were those little legs, especially when he was moving around. And I suspect that the little legs, when they were pulled in like they were on this particular movie at IMAX, would have been very hard to see. And so you'll see that theropods, lots of the theropods that are depicted in Middle Age art, the Middle Ages, the front legs just aren't there. I think one of the reasons is when you see them moving around, it's very easy to miss those front legs. That's my opinion. You can take it for what you paid for. And I can't prove it. You can't prove me wrong, right? All right, moving right along. Spent thousands of hours at this, and that's the conclusion that I've reached. St. Andrew's Hall in Norwich. I went there saying Norwich, and I got corrected. And it's very humbling going to England thinking you can speak English. And trust me, we can't. All right? So St. Andrew's Hall, this was basically completed in the middle of the 1400s. And here's an interesting medieval dragon. And he reminded me of a baby T-Rex. And here's a baby T-Rex here. The artist that did the reconstructions for the book, that's what you see in the presentation. They didn't see any of this artwork before. They didn't know it was going to be compared to artwork in the book. They didn't copy the artwork. They made the dinosaurs, and then I had a sketch artist make a quick pose, and they put them in the pose, because these are three-dimensionally generated dinosaurs, so once they're complete, they can put them in any pose that we want. So, this is King of England, Edward IV, and he minted what's known as the Gold Angel coin. And this was during his second reign, 1471 to 1483, St. Michael slaying the dragon, which is a symbol of Satan. But take a look at the dragon. Notice his leg, absolutely perfect. Notice the three toes. Notice the claws. Notice the ridge down the back. Notice the scale pattern. Notice the ridge of the nose. Notice the bump up above the eye. Notice what appear to be teeth here. The only thing that we might change is this external ear flap. But then again, we haven't found all the soft tissue for dinosaurs. Now, when we compare this to known dinosaurs like the theropod Carnotaurus, notice the leg, notice the three toes, notice the ridge down the back, notice the bones up above the eye. Almost a perfect match. This is Carlisle Cathedral, built in 1122 AD. Bishop Richard Bell died and was buried in the floor of the cathedral in 1496. We got special permission to remove the carpet. Believe me, that is a big deal. You may not think so, but they don't like creationists. And so even though I had permission, they wanted to make sure that we're not there to take pictures of the dinosaurs on the tomb, because there aren't any dinosaurs on the tomb. Anyway, we were there for an hour or 2 hours taking pictures, and a little old English lady comes along.
"Oh, you must be very privileged. I haven't seen this tomb unveiled for 10 years.
She came down to see it. She hadn't seen it for 10 years. And here are some of the things that are basically engraved on the tomb. We see fish. There's an eel. There's a medieval fox. There's a dog. There are actually several dogs. Just giving you some highlights here. There's a bat. There's a bird. If we knew more, we could identify, you know, exactly what kind of bird.
Oh, yes, and two mythical creatures.
Well, people have been walking over this, but the tool that was used was held on an angle, and we can see that the point has basically left deeper holes, so we can basically connect the dots, so to speak. And we take a look at the creature on the right side there. Very, very interesting. Looks a lot like a sauropod dinosaur. This is just a sauropod dinosaur, Volcanodon. I'm not saying it is that particular one, but I don't think there's any doubt that it resembles a sauropod dinosaur. Well, let's move on to France. And this is Francois I, King of France, from 1515 to 1547. And he chose as his emblem, today we might call it his logo, the legendary salamander. Now, when you go here, they just call it the salamander, and they have pictures of the fire salamander. Wait a minute. The French need to go back and study their own history. This is great, you know, for the tourists. No, he didn't choose the salamander. He chose the legendary salamander. There's a difference. The fire salamander is just a little cute guy. The legendary salamander was equivalent to the dragons of all the other nations. And so that's Chambord, Le Château du Chambord. This was November 2007, the first time I was there. I was there again in 2010. And there are over 800 of these legendary salamanders, with F for Francois. And the difference is that a regular salamander doesn't have a long neck, and these do. Regular salamanders don't have scales, and these do. These are fundamentally, basically, dinosaur-like creatures, dinosaurs. They're not basically salamanders, as we understand salamanders. And so this is now in Blois. This is the Francois wing in Blois. And here's the spiral staircase with salamanders, as they call them. Okay, that's not a salamander as we understand it today. This is what they call the legendary salamander, or the dragon. When this is compared with the plateosaurus, or a larger grouping known as the prosauropods, I chose the plateosaurus because of the skull, because of the teeth, etc., etc. Match is very, very compelling. Inside, there was this tapestry. Notice this cute little guy over here. This is a one-to-one scale of that portion of the tapestry. Notice where the nose openings are. Notice this section here. Okay, this looks like a juvenile duck-billed dinosaur known as a Mayasaura. This was produced in France. Mayasaura, people saw them, have only ever been found to date in Montana, USA. There's a reconstruction. The color variation has actually come not from this, but from modern lizard. Here we are at Azay Le Rideau. And you see a fireplace here. You can see Francois the First. His touch is on here as well. And there's a table that was made in 1630. I know that because the carver 1630 on the table makes my work a little bit easier. Appreciated that. You might say, well, okay, there's a dragon, but so what? It's just a typical dragon. Well, this is where I keep talking about artistic stylization. What do we have here? Any ideas? It is a shark, and the teeth probably gave it away. And this is from a scientific work done by Nicholas Steno, same time period in the 1600s in Europe. Why do I bring that up? Because, you know, this is what the shark looks like. But this is artwork from the Middle Ages, 1600s, Europe. Now, if that's what they depicted it as, is there really any doubt what that is? Artwork, 1600s, Europe. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever. Here we have an Albertosaurus, modern stylization. Here we have, well, yes, we have the ear. I understand that. We haven't found all the soft tissue of dinosaurs. I don't think there's any doubt that it's the same type of thing. Middle Ages, artistic stylization, modern stylization. Artistic stylization is very, very important. Let's move on to Spain. This is one of my favorite examples. 1600, Barcelona, Spain, altar cloth, St. George, slaying the dragon. Look at the head on this creature. Look at the teeth. What is it? I think I can say beyond any shadow of a doubt, tooth for tooth, scale for tail, leg for leg, claw for claw, it's a Nothosaurus. What is a Nothosaurus? Look at the teeth jutting out. Large teeth, they go small, small to the back. Large teeth jutting out, get small, small to the back. Same here. Large teeth, get small, small to the back. Large teeth jutting out, get small, small to the back. According to the evolutionists, the Nothosaurus went extinct 206 million years ago. What in the world is Antoni Cerni doing depicting one alive and well on an altar cloth in 1600? Folks, we've been sold a lie. I was brainwashed with this growing up, but I don't believe it anymore. Well, if you went to public school, maybe this reminds you of one of your teachers, I don't know. That's what he looked like from the front. There's the altar cloth. There's a reconstruction of Nothosaurus based on fossils. This is a Dogon riding what I was told was a chameleon. Well, let's look at some chameleon artwork from Africa. There's one, there's one, there's one, there's one. Notice what's conspicuously absent on most artwork from Africa of chameleons. Also notice the neck, notice the jaw, notice the Roman nose. There's a chameleon. Even if there was, the neck's wrong, jaw's wrong, the nose is wrong. I have seen notice the jaw. This is a Roman nose dinosaur. Notice Gryphosaurus. Notice the Roman nose. Notice the length here. I believe that dinosaurs lived recently. I was giving this lecture and a woman yelled out, "It's a horse!" Okay, just to prove my point, they also made horses and they knew what they looked like. Okay. They also made camels. Okay, apparently they knew what crocodiles were. I don't think it's a chameleon. Not a turtle. Here's an Ethiopian Coptic Bible. They made these from the 1400s up until the mid-late 1800s. St. George slaying the dragon. No wings, large rear legs, fairly small front legs because we can't see them. Big tail out the back, vicious teeth. Looks a lot like a small theropod, maybe something like a T-Rex. It's on the table up here. China. We'll end with this. used third-party experts to authenticate this. In fact, the gentleman that we used is one of the best in the world at authenticating ancient Chinese jade artifacts. Professor of authentication of ancient Chinese jades. Because on the internet, and Phil Center, I mentioned, who didn't bring the ladder, he's like, oh, by the way, I've got an expert that says those artifacts are fake. I said, oh, is that right? He said, well, I'm going to be writing a paper about this. I said, well, you go ahead and write your paper, and then I'll pull out my authentication papers. He said, well, if you got something saying they're authentic, you go ahead and let me know. I'll put it in my paper. I said, no, you go ahead and write your paper. Once your paper's written, I'll pull out my papers. Turtle. Okay, what do we got there? Okay. Hog, wild hog, warthog. Yeah, this has been polished. When they pull these things out of the ground, they want to get more money for them. But you can't completely polish off signs of authenticity. That's in the display case up here, compared to a Centrosaurus. These are over 4,000 years old. There's another one over 4,000 years old compared to a Gracilaceratops. There's another one over 4,000 years old compared to a Stegosaurus. Ancient China. Here's another one over 4,000 years old compared to a Protoceratops. Dragons were dinosaurs. Dinosaurs were dragons. Children's Museum of Indianapolis, is it a dragon or a dinosaur? Question. And the answer is what? Yes. Both. Here's the dinosaur they found a few years ago. And they have... There's a reconstruction. Dracorex hogwartsia. Didn't name it. It's a new type of dinosaur that looks like a dragon. When we saw this creature's head, we weren't sure what kind of dinosaur it was. Spiky horns, bumps, and long muzzle looked more like a dragon. According to the Bible, the dragons, also known as dinosaurs, scientifically were made on day 6 alongside Adam and Eve. Dinosaurs and people, therefore, live together. Psalms 119:160, thy word is true from the beginning, and every one of thy righteous judgments endureth forever. If you're interested in this type of material, we covered some of the information last night on Noah's flood. This basically is three books in one. Section 1 deals with Noah's Ark. What did it look like and how do we know from Scripture? Is there any evidence that it survived? Section number 1, Noah's Ark. Section number 2 deals with the fossils themselves, evidence that fossils formed rapidly, evidence that fossils formed recently, and evidence that fossils formed under watery conditions, i.e. the flood. And section 3 is on fast fossils. Petrified fence posts, socks that fossilized in the stomach of a cow, things like that. And then tonight's lecture plus more, dire dragons, dinosaurs and people living together. Then new evidence that dinosaurs have lived recently in the Amazon jungles of northern Peru, and a new piece of artwork, pictograph, that was done roughly 3,000 years ago in the Amazon, showing a sauropod dinosaur surrounded by nine hunters and its authentication, Amazon expedition. And that is it. So thank you very much.